It's the 23rd of April, and the time is 9:02 today. And those of you having a little trouble searching for stuff, stick around after class. We'll spend a little time doing that, or maybe doing some calculations, because we're going to continue with bond calculations today. How are we doing, folks? Even with the continual predictions of the world ending anytime soon this weekend. But don't take anything off my desk. Were you here on Tuesday?
Chapter 9.
Okay, come after class, but don't take anything off my desk. Even with all the predictions of gloom and doom and death and destruction and desolation, we're up 7%. Thank you for Solar and Apple. And Procter & Gamble, I would not sell this. I would buy more right here for the next 3 to 5 years. But as we saw, Value Line wasn't too cool on that. Anybody? Getting near the end. What do you do? Sell any stuff? Buy something different? David?
Why is it the
end of the world? Well, let's see. Which one? The Middle East, right? Gay marriage. What else? Putin. Greece. What else? China slowing down. What else? I mean, what other disasters are happening? Come on, you guys read the news. Disco returning? I don't know. Ebola. Chile! Volcano! Did you see those pictures? Unbelievable. Just type in Chile, volcano. The pictures are unbelievable of this thing. The incredible. We got out of bombs. They've got volcanoes. Nature's got volcanoes. So, the world's going to end next Tuesday, I think, right? We'll see. All right, we have to got a lot of work to do today, folks. We always have a lot of work to do. Don't always say that, don't I? But first, we always have to have a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? All right, how about a bad joke? Did you hear about the two hydrogen atoms walking down the street? No? It's a chemistry joke. And the one hydrogen atom says, I think I lost my electron. The other one says, are you sure? He says, yes, I'm positive. See, he lost the electron, so he's now positive. You can tell that to your chemistry teacher. All right, so on Tuesday, got your calculators out, got your worksheet number one out. On Tuesday, we went through the current yield, the yield to maturity, and the yield to call, along with the nominal yield. Today, we're going to finish up the yield calculations with taxable equivalent yields for muni bonds. And then we'll spend a little time talking about the yield curve. And then we discuss bond valuation, which is actually part of why bonds are kind of cool, but not really. Because it's going to look familiar. At least it should look familiar. The taxable equivalent yield for muni bonds has to be calculated before you can compare your muni bond to a corporate bond or a treasury, because muni bonds are tax exempt from federal taxes. And if you buy a bond from your state, in our case California, then the state says, cool, we'll give you a tax break. We won't charge you income tax on your California muni bond. So the formulas are very similar. Here's the formula for the taxable equivalent yield for a muni bond that is simply federal tax rate. We're in California, we buy a Nevada, or we buy an Illinois bond, some muni bond outside the state of California. What we need to do is we need to take the yield, in this case 6%, and we divide it by 1 minus our federal tax bracket. Now, the federal tax bracket is different for everybody. Let's assume the person is in the 25% tax bracket. So that would be, let me get some help here. That's okay. Okay, let's get this going. So that would be 6%, 0.06, divided by 1 minus 0.25. 0.06 divided by 1 minus 0.25 is 0.758%, 0.08. Make sense? What does it mean? Well, it means you have a decision between a 6% municipal bond or an 8% corporate bond, And it turns out for you, they are taxably equivalent. If you're in the 25% tax bracket. If you're in the 35% tax bracket, you have to do a different calculation. If you're in the 10%. And what it turns out is the higher this number is, the higher that number is. So do you understand? What would you rather have? A 6% muni bond or an 8% corporate bond if you're in the 25% tax bracket? Doesn't matter. It doesn't. They are equivalent. Now, you might say the muni bond is a better buy because it's safer. I'm not going to default. But how much money are we getting from a 6% muni bond? $60. Well, how much money do you get from a 4% bond? How much money do you get from a 3% bond? So how much money are we getting from a 6% bond? How much money are we getting from an 8% bond? Wait a minute. How could they be equivalent? What tax bracket are we in? 25%. Multiply 80 times 0.25, and what do you get? $20. So where's 20 bucks going? Going to the tax man, going to the IRS. So what are you left with? So you see how they are equivalent? Does that make sense? Right? Yeah, they're equivalent. And that's why it turns, and if you run it again for 35%, you'll notice that this number is higher. Or 39.6%, which is the highest tax bracket currently, it's even higher. So who do you think is more interested in muni bonds? The wealthy people, your wealthy people. That's why it's a $25,000 minimum, as we saw on Tuesday. And now, if it's double tax-free, there are actually two different formulas. We're going to use the trickier one. Some of you have taken Business 121, you saw, oh, that's not as sneaky. Then the formula on the next slide. Because the formula on the next slide assumes that the person in question itemizes their deductions on their federal income tax. And I don't want to get into Form 1040 and Schedule A and all that, but this is a good assumption. Because people who are making $400,000 a year, they probably have $1 million home, they're taking their itemizing their deductions. So this is definitely typical of the people who would buy municipal bonds. So if you look at the one we do in 121, we just do municipal bond yield divided by 1 minus the federal rate plus the state rate. But really, to take into account the fact that they're itemizing their deductions and deducting their state income taxes, we really need to add this extra term. It looks scary, but it's really not that hard. It's really not. It just adds a few more an extra calculation in there. So if we now find that this 6% bond is a California bond, City of Chula Vista, Southwestern Community College bond, then we take 6% divided by 1. 1, by the way, is 100%. It's the same thing. Minus the federal rate plus the state rate, but we have to multiply the state rate times 1 minus the federal rate. So it kind of looks like it's a little bit redundant there, but no, we have to essentially reduce the state rate by the fact that we can itemize our state income taxes. And we're not doing that because we're not paying them. So if the state rate is 8%, then you take 0.08 times 1 minus the 25% for this couple, or whatever they are. 1 minus 0.05 is 0.75. 0.75 times 0.08 is 0.06. Are you following me? I'm going too fast. Get your calculators out. Add the 25% for the federal rate, 0.31. 1 minus 0.31 is 0.69. So 0.06 divided by 0.69. Make sure I did that right. Check to make sure I did it right. Is that 8.7%? Close enough for government work? 8.7%. So over here, if it were just federally tax-free, it was equivalent to an 8% corporate bond. Here, because it's federal and state tax-free, it's equivalent to an 8.7% bond. Corporate, fully taxable. Did I go over your heads too fast? No? Okay, so let's do the calculation. Got your worksheets? Worksheet number one. Anybody not here on Tuesday? Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. I'm running out of worksheets. How could I run out of worksheets? No, here they, no, these are the assignments. How can I run out of worksheets? I ran out of worksheets. Okay, you'll have to get next to somebody. How could I have run out of worksheets? You ever have one of those decades?
Worksheet number one.
You must be sitting somewhere else. Nope. I'm out of worksheets. On valuation formulas. Okay, were you here on Tuesday? Okay, you got yours? Okay. Who needs a worksheet?
I have one extra.
You have one extra? Pass it that way. Get close to Betsy there, Elizabeth. You have an extra worksheet, Jacob? You got it? Okay. I apologize. I don't know where it is. Damn it. All right. So let's do number three, right? We're at number three. Who will read number three for me? Yes, George.
A married couple from California is in the 35% federal tax bracket and the 1% California tax. I mean, the
11%
California tax bracket. They are considering a 5% Arizona municipal bond, federally tax-free, and a 4.5% California bond, federal tax-free, or a 7% corporate bond, fully taxable. Which bond offers the highest after-tax interest rate?
Okay, so they're in the 35% tax bracket. They're making $300,000 a year. 11% California, 5% Arizona, 4.5% California, 7% fully taxable corporate. Looking at these three, we cannot compare which is the best one until we have done our taxable equivalent yield calculations. Because 7% looks better, but it's not taking into account the fact that they don't have to pay taxes on those. So, what's the first one you want to do? Arizona. Do you ever do a calculation for the corporate bond? Everyone just say no. Do you ever do a calculation for the corporate bond?
No.
If you do a calculation for the corporate bond, what do you get? Sopapo. Gulp slap. Okay? Don't do it. It's already fully taxable. All right. So we'll do the Arizona first. The Arizona is simply federal tax-free. That is all it is federal tax-free. So we use which formula? We use the first one that's on your formula sheet that says take the muni bond yield divided by 1 minus the federal tax bracket. So what's the Arizona bond? Everyone should say 5%? That's how I gauge if you're still awake or not, if I'm losing you. Well, what's the Arizona bond? 5%. Everyone should say 5%. And then divided by 1 minus the federal tax bracket. What's the federal tax bracket? Everyone should say 35%. That's how I know you're still awake and alive and remotely sober. What's the federal tax rate? Everyone didn't say it. Why don't you say it? Why is it? Is it so bad that you can't? I don't understand. I'm getting old. That's the problem. And when people get old, they get cranky and they get excited and they might do things that get them in big trouble. So, what's the federal bracket?
35.
Thank you. Okay. So, 0.05 divided by 1 minus 0.35 is?
0.65.
All right. So, 0.05 divided by 0.65, what is the Arizona paying us on a taxable equivalent basis? 7.69%. You can, whatever your calculator writes out, you can write out. But make sure if you do change it to 3 significant digits or 4 significant digits that you round correctly. So right off the bat, we know that the Arizona bond for them is better than the corporate bond, right? Because we'd have to get a corporate bond paying 7.69% to be equivalent to the Arizona bond. Now, the California bond is 4.5%. Uh-oh, how do we write that? Right, 0.045. Everyone should say 0.045. How do we write that?
0.045.
Okay. But because this bond is double tax-free, the feds can't tax it, and the state of California says to the California couple, no problem, you don't have to pay California income taxes. Then we use this bad boy right here. We have to plug in more numbers, but it's really not that hard. 1 minus the federal rate of 0.35% for this couple, plus the state rate of 11%, 0.11, times the quantity again, 1, plus the federal rate, 1 minus, can't take a joke. That's 1 minus 0.35. So there's that 0.65 again. Multiply 0.11 times 0.65 in your calculators. Where's your calculator? Get your calculator out. No, you don't want to get your calculator out. Okay. What is that?
0.07.
You're letting Steve have all the fun. 0.07.
1.5.
You add that to the 0.35, 0.4215, and then you take 1 minus that. You just got to work your way from the inside parentheses all the way to out. And so 1 minus 0.4215. Elizabeth says 5785. Is she right?
Yes.
So 0.045 divided by 5785 is?
99 cents
hard without a calculator. It makes it hard. Okay. Should bring some extra. Go to the 99 cent store. Get a 99 cent. That's all you need. Add, subtract, multiply, and divide. 7.778. So this one is a little better than the Arizona bond. With us? Is that hard? I don't think so, but yes.
And the questions will always say federal tax-free or double tax.
Right, exactly. It'll say a California couple is thinking of buying an Ohio bond or an Hawaii bond or a California bond. And anything outside California, we use this formula. Anything inside California, if we're California residents, we use this formula. And, of course, if we're in New York, we would have to buy a New York bond. Yes? At least. I'd like you to use at least 4 significant figures, because in bond yields, you see, if you go, especially if you took chemistry, if you just write, in this case, 8%, if you rounded that up 8%, that means anything between 7.500 all the way up to 8.499, which is a pretty big difference in the bond world, right? Not that you'll ever get this at these days, but someday it'll come back and we'll have 8% from bonds. We're not getting 8% for bonds now. Do you understand the difference?
Yeah, so their answer should be 7.79.
Yeah, that'll work. 7.79, that'll work. No.
Yeah, 3.8.
No.
No,
7.78.
The zeros don't count.
Wait a minute, I'm confused. You're right, the zeros don't count. These are three sig.
So
this is three sig.
You started at 7.778.
So then it would be, yeah, that's fine, that's right. I don't know the rest of the numbers.
You round it up, so it's 7.79, right?
No, if you rounded this number up, it would go to 8. This 7 would go to an 8 if you rounded that up. You'd have 7.78%.
See, the answer was 0.07778, right?
0.07778.
So you got 1, 2, 3, 4
C's. 4 significant digits. That'll work. 7.778%. That would work. You can leave it right there. If you're going to round to 3 significant digits, then this 7 would become an 8, not a 9. The 8 would disappear as soon as you went to 3 significant digits. It would go like that. We'll talk about it afterwards. Let's keep going. All right, so if you're still confused about this, please contact me, because sometimes conceptually it's a little harder than the calculations. In my experience, I found that some people go, well, what are we calculating? What you're doing, as we said, is you're calculating the ability to compare your muni bond to a corporate bond. That's what you're doing. Now, how do you do it? You just use these two formulas, which are fairly straightforward. Okay? All right, let's continue. And if you have problems, stick it to class. We'll do some more. Spread, yield spreads. The difference in interest rates that exist among various sectors of the bond market. The shorter the maturity in general, in other words, the shorter the time before you get your money back, the lower the rate. The longer the maturity, the longer the rate. And this makes perfect sense, and we'll take a look at some of the reasoning in a bit. Also, if the bond is higher rated, if it has a better chance of being paid, the lower the rate. And if the bond is a little shaky, they're going to expect a higher interest rate to take into account the fact that it's a more speculative issue. Treasuries carry the lowest rate, then munis, and then corporate bonds. And of course, a non-callable bond is going to have a more desirable feature for investors, so they will accept a lower rate. A callable bond will have a higher rate. And this is, when you went online, which you did, nod your heads, yes, everybody, you went online and go through chapter 9, you'll see we go from treasuries to munis to corporate bonds, and then we talk about junk bonds. Here, as of, when was this? April 2nd, is the yield spread. And right now, folks, it is just unbelievable what bonds are paying. I never thought I'd live to see these days. The 3-month on the 2nd of April was paying nothing. So you might as well take your money and put it under your mattress, because that's exactly what you're getting. And the 6-month was paying 0.07. And then look at that, 10-year, it's gone up. It's now, yesterday I think it was 1.98. But still, it's still under 2%. If inflation is running at 2%, what's happening to your money? Nothing! It's actually going down. And then somebody out there is locking in their money at 2.5% for 30 years. Those are the treasuries. Corporates, now look, we got the 2-year is paying 0.53. The 2-year AA corporates are paying 0.78. That's a tiny little spread. You're not getting paid that much more to go with a corporate bond. Look at the 20-year. They don't match. Let's do 10-year. 10-year is paying 1.91, and the AA rated, let's do A rated, 2.92. So you're getting an extra 1% for taking a 10-year corporate bond, which is, again, not that big a spread. Often investors will speak about the bond spread as being tight or wide. A tight spread means that the interest rates among the bonds that they are evaluating are very close to one another, as we saw in the previous slide. Example, Treasury paying... I really should change these numbers. I mean, someday, folks, the Treasury will pay 4.8%. It will happen. We know it'll happen. Maybe not. Maybe the world will end. I don't know. And the corporate bond is paying 5.1%, tiny little spread. The people in the industry will use the term basis point. This is only 300 basis points. And what is that? No, 30 basis points. A basis point is, I don't care if you use it, I don't use it, but a basis point is 0.01%. So 100 basis points is equal to 1%. I will not ask you that. You will hear it. I think it's dumb, but that's what they do. Well, they just say 0.3%. I don't know. 30 basis points. A wide spread means that there is a big difference between the bond interest rates. Treasury's paying 3.2. Corporate's paying 8.2. This is what happened in 2008-09. In 2008-09, corporates, because everybody went flight to quality, it's called, the bond yields fell because the prices went up. Whereas the corporate bonds, people dumped them, so the yields skyrocketed. Remember the Ford bonds paying 13 and 14%? So that's what happened during the 2008. For many years, the yields were tight, and then they widened substantially, and now they're back down to very, very tight. So let's take a look at the difference between interest rates and inflation. And what we see here, this is the red one is inflation, right? The red one is inflation, and we see inflation rising precipitously in the 1970s, and bond yields doing the same. And then we see inflation falling over the, and look, in 2009, it actually went negative. Housing prices, wages fell, and inflation went deflation, that's called. And then we see the bond yields going down. The yield curve is the graph that represents the relationship between a bond's maturity and its yield at a given point in time. We use this to make comparison amongst different types of bonds. And as we said, longer-term bonds normally have higher interest rates than shorter-term bonds. But sometimes the world gets strange. And sometimes longer-term interest rates are lower than higher than short-term interest rates. Short-term interest rates are higher than... It's called an inverted yield curve. It's a very strange world. Here is the normal world where shorter-term bonds and bills, treasury bills and notes, have a lower interest rate, and it slopes upward. Here is the weird world, the strange world, the unforgiving world, where it goes the other way. So, this is it currently. This is as of 2nd of April. We see that the the yield on the 3-month treasury bill is zero, and then it slopes upward to where somebody buying a 30-year treasury is getting a whopping 2.5%. Yippee! Why do longer-term debt securities normally have higher interest rates than shorter-term debt securities? Well, forget the theories for now, but think about it. If your money is out there longer, 15, 30 years, you're going to expect a higher interest rate than if your money's out there for a year or two or 5 years. Does that make sense? There's just more chances for things to go wrong. So we have come up with these hypotheses. The shape of the yield curve reflects investors' expectations of the future interest rates. Well, that makes sense. The maturity preference hypothesis, liquidity preference hypothesis. Investors tend to prefer the liquidity, meaning the ability to sell your bond, of short-term securities, and therefore require a premium to invest in longer-term securities. And the market segmentation hypothesis. The market for debt is segmented on the basis of maturity, and there is a supply and demand curve within each segment. In other words, people who need their money in 5 years are going to pay a different amount of money than people who need their money in 10 years or 15 years. And each of these three theories makes sense, and each has some merit. But how do we account for the times when the yield curve is inverted? When instead of going like this, which is, makes sense, it goes like this. Huh? What factors could cause an inverted yield curve to occur? And what can the yield curve tell us about the future of the economy? Well, dear students, since World War II, every time the yield curve has inverted where short-term rates were higher than longer-term rates, the economy has fallen into a recession. There was one exception in 1996 where it just touched zero. It didn't go negative. The economy didn't start. What is a recession, by the way? I might be talking above your heads. I apologize. You know, if you guys have questions, you ask. I love questions. A recession is defined as 6 months, 2 quarters of negative growth. Isn't that a great name? Contraction. It means the economy is shrinking for 2 quarters, for 6 months. There's another definition. A recession is when your neighbor loses their job, and a depression is when you lose your job. That's another definition. If you think about that. So in 1966, it just barely touched zero. It didn't go negative. The yield curve, as we saw a couple slides ago, is currently mostly upward. But for about 2 years before the beginning of 2008, the yield curve had been inverted. Now, it was a very slight inversion. It was like this. It went... slightly inverted. But people in the industry were debating whether we're going to have a recession. It was a big debate. I don't know if you remember 2006 and 7, but the housing market was exploding. The stock market did pretty darn well since 2002. And the ownership society, Bush was pushing that, and regulations were stupid, markets were smart, the government's dumb. And the bond market, though, which is usually a whole lot smarter than the stock market, had been, predicting a recession for over 2 years. The stock market didn't believe them. It wasn't until the fall of 2008 that the officials charged with tracking the economy acknowledged, yes, we're in a recession. It took over 2 years, but the bond ghouls were finally proven right. And why are they called ghouls? I told you a little bit about that, right? They don't like inflation. They don't like it when the economy's rip-roaring and everybody's getting more jobs and prices are rising. They hate inflation. They love, they supposedly love recessions. Why? Because if the economy goes into reverse, the demand for money goes down, interest rates go down. What happens when interest rates go down? Bond prices go up. So that's why they're called the bond ghouls. I don't necessarily like that name, but you decide. So, any questions on that? I went through that quickly. I apologize, but I want you to go through it again and again. You're studying, right? Because that's what you do. You students study. Because now we finally get to the part about bonds that's kind of exciting. Now, you have the worksheet, right? Some of you don't have the worksheet. I apologize. But you also have the formula sheet? Anybody not have the formula sheet? Okay, give him the formula sheet. And I ran out of worksheets. I don't understand why I ran out of worksheets. So you'll have to sneak up to somebody who has a worksheet. I wonder if somebody, I don't know, that's all right. Now, bonds are boring, right? We said bonds are boring, and they are. They are normally priced according to the present value of their future cash flows. Does this look familiar? Yeah? The semi-annual interest payments, and then the fact that they repay the principal. Although other factors will always need to be considered, such as the creditworthiness of the issuer, because if people believe that the issuer is going to go belly up and not be able to make their interest payments, they're going to dump the bond, as we saw with Poway, as we saw with Ford. The bond price, where's my... Okay, the bond price, the predicted bond price, we should say, is equal to the present value, and if you go to the university, I'll show you what they do at the university, they say PV, of the interest income, the future interest income, plus the PV, and I really like that because I like Puerto Vallarta. Have you been to Puerto Vallarta? It's a great place. And the present value of the repayment of the principal, because we know we're going to get our principal back in 99% or however many percent, depending on what type of bonds we buy. Most bond issuers pay back their interest payments. They pay back their principal. Now, because bonds pay semi-annually, we really should do this every 6 months. We should do the fact that we're getting the money every 6 months. But annual compounding is easier, and it will give you almost the exact same answer. And the spreadsheet makes the life a whole lot easier. It does the semi-annually compounding for us. So we'll take a look at a spreadsheet in just a bit. So here's an example. Have you ever heard of Avery Dennison? They've been a company, have been around for, I don't know, how many decades. What do they make? Labels. When you go to this Office Cheapo or Stipples or Stupples, or you'll see Avery labels. Now, there are knockoffs. But they're the ones. In fact, if you go into your Weird program, I'm sorry, what's it called? Word. You go into Word and you say you want labels, it'll say Avery 8623, 88. It'll tell you which ones you want. And there's three across, 20 down, whatever. So here is, I chose this one because it was close to 3%. 5.75% is the coupon yield. They're due, and I chose it because it's due in, you know, in this case, 5 years, right? 5 years. Price to yield, close to 3%. So the yield to maturity is 2.927. The current yield is 4.827. 3% is, 2.927, dyslexia can strike at any age, is close to 3%. Let's use 3% for 5 years. So, the present value of the interest income is equal to the interest income. What does a 5.35% bond pay us every year? $53.75. Everybody understand that? $53.75. Okay, well, we're going to get $53.75. We're going to get that every year. I'm trying to get half of that every 6 months, so let's not do that. We're going to get that every year for the next 5 years. So if you go back to chapter 6, do you remember when we took the dividend for year number 1, the dividend for year number 2? Well, we could do that. We could write year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but that's a lot of work, especially if it's a 20-year bond or a 30-year bond. So the reason we have the chapter 6 table was because we only did 2 or 3 years. But the table I just gave you has two of them. The one on the right is exactly the same. I'm sorry, the one on the left. The one on the left is exactly the same table that we used in chapter 6. It's exactly the same, it's a lot smaller. So if you have glasses, I apologize. If you're old like me, I apologize. But young folks, you can read it. The table on the right, on the other hand, though, does it for a stream of similar payments. Because we know we're going to get $53.75 every year, we can use the table on the left. I'm sorry, the table on the left. I said right, didn't I? The table on the left. You see what it says? Present value of a dollar stream of payments. So we know we're going to get $53.75 5 years, and we are using 3%. So go across the 3% down to 5 years, and what is the present value multiplier? 4.580. Is that what you got? Everybody get that? Okay, so if we multiply 5375 times 4.580, what is that? It's on the board. But I hope you do it in your calculator. 246.18. So what is that telling us? That's telling us that today, this stream of $53.75 payments over the next 5 years is worth to us $246.18. Remember present value? It's the same deal, isn't it? It's the exact same formula, except we're using a different table, so we don't have to do it year number 1, year number 2, year number 3, year number 4, year number 5. This just makes life easier. Now, we're going to get a single payment at the end of 5 years of how much? $1,000. Everyone should say $1,000. What are we going to get when the bond matures? So, what is that worth to us today? That's a single payment. That's the table on the right. I got to turn around so I give you the right. I don't point the wrong way. The table on the right, which is the exact same table we used in chapter 6. Go across 3%, down 5 years. What's the present value multiplier? 0.863. Everybody see that? And you don't really have to do the calculation. Just move the decimal point 3 to the right. But it's up to you if you want to do the calculation. That's $863. So that $1,000 we're going to get in 5 years at 3% is worth to us today, the present value, $863. You add these two together, and what does the model tell us the bond should be selling for? 110918? Well, on April 2nd, The bond was selling for $1,113.49. Yes, bonds are boring. Because they are fixed. You see, the stock, we said, hey, we're going to get these amount of dividends this year, and we think the dividends are going to go up to this next year, and we think the dividends are going to go up in the third year, and then we think the stock is going to be worth this much in 3 or 4 years. But did we know? Hell no. But do you know, unless Avery Davidson goes out of business, do you know you're going to get this money? Yes, you do. So it turns out the bond predictions are incredibly accurate, within a few dollars of one another, depending on the credit quality and investors' whims of that day. The one thing you don't or can't predict is what's going to happen to interest rates. And as we said, there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly predict where interest rates are going to go. Can you imagine? Yeah, they are. You could be one of them. You just have to convince people that you know that what's going to happen. And then when it doesn't happen, you have to have a good excuse for why you were wrong and why you're going to be right the next time. And you, too, can make $500,000 a year plus yearly bonuses on Wall Street. Do I sound cynical? I apologize. Okay. So, guess what? Do we really need to do these calculations? Yes, because I'm going to ask you on the exam, and we don't have spreadsheets, and not everybody gets a spreadsheet in this. You know, some universities, you pay $40,000 a year for tuition, plus room and board, but you get a laptop, and you're supposed to bring it to class. So what we do is we put on the website a spreadsheet calculator. Where is it? There it is. Do save link as to the desktop, and then open this puppy. And we don't even have to learn how to use the darn. In fact, a lot of the online students, when they turn in their assignments, they turn them in, you know, they type them into the spreadsheet. So in the spreadsheet, you put in the gray areas. You put in the coupon rate, the last quote. You don't need the last quote. It calculates the current yield. The maturity date, you need the maturity date. And then it'll calculate the years of maturity. And then you can put the price, the yield, but it doesn't use a calculator. The calculator doesn't use it. Principal, the rating. Notice that they're BBB. That might be why they're a couple dollars more. Callable, yes. And it does it annually, but it also does it semi-annually. And you'll notice that the semi-annual one, because that's what it's really worth to us, because we're not going to get $53.75 once a year. We're going to get half of that in 6 months. And then at the end of the year, we'll get the other half. So we really should use this calculation, and I'm not going to ask you to do that manually, but that's why we have spreadsheets. The manual spreadsheet does a much better job. And then, we're not going to ask you to do this, but to get the true rate of return, you want to do the internal rate of return calculation, and the internal rate of return is more precise than the yield to maturity approximation that we did on Tuesday. Remember the yield to maturity approximations? You should, because you're going to do those. That funky, scary-looking calculation with the annual interest divided by the average of the two. There's that thing. But the internal rate of return, which we know to be far more precise, is that one. Questions? That's why spreadsheets are so cool. So, let's now do worksheet number one. And where's this? PowerPoint, there it is. Boom, boom. Okay. I apologize if I'm going through this so quickly, but I really, really do want to get through chapter 10 tonight, and then today, and then do chapter 11 on Tuesday. Our exam is when? I forgot to write that on the board. Next Thursday, right? I gave you the updated schedule. The exam is next Thursday. We'll review on Tuesday. Write that down. You should write that down. Let's write that down. Exam number 4. We told you on Tuesday. Always on the website. Chapters 9 and 10, bonds. There'll be 3 questions or 2 questions. I'm not sure yet. I got to look. From chapter 18, I'll give you the handouts. I'll show you the questions on Tuesday. How's that? Come on Tuesday. You'll see the questions on the exam, because this is not that important. And then, so we'll have the bond calculations that we're doing in worksheet number 1, and then we'll work on number 2, maybe today, maybe Tuesday. And then also, don't forget, the constant perpetual from chapter 6 and the discounted cash flow from chapter 6, because that'll be on the exam. And we'll discuss it again on Tuesday. So, trial problem number, I don't have any more. How can I run out? Do you guys ever see me run out? Never, 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 never. All right, so number 4. Someone read me number 4. I'll put it on the board. That's what I'm going to do. I'll put it on the screen. Get it on the screen, Tayano. Worksheet number 1. There we go. Here is the annual compounding. In other words, this formula we just used. Find the prices for the following bond. A 9% bond, that's 10 years, priced to yield 7%. Now, here's where you can zig when you should have zagged. This one is the coupon rate. That doesn't change. This one is the yield to maturity that changes as interest rates change. So be careful. This is the one we use in the table. Use this. If it doesn't make sense, then just make sure you use the second one in the problem, right? So what is this? What is a 9% bond paying us?
$90
a month. So the first thing we need is we need to get the present value of the interest income. PV of the interest income. So what's the interest income? $90. This is a bond that is priced to yield 7% for 10 years. Which table do we use? The stream, the one on the left. So go across to 7 or 9. Go across to 7 or 9. Which one? Everyone should say 7. Go across to 7 or 9?
7.
Go across to 7, down 10%. What's the present value multiplier?
0.24.
Okay. And to that, we're going to add the present value of the principal repayment. The fact that we're going to get $1,000 back when the bond matures. Everybody there with us? So what are we going to get back in 10 years? $1,000. But what is it worth to us today? Which table do we use? The one on the right, which is a single payment. Don't use the one on the left because that means we're getting $1,000 every year for the next 10 years. That ain't happening. We're only getting $1,000 once. So go across to the table on the right. Go across to 7%, down 10 years. What's the present value multiplier? 508. So you can do this calculation in your head, right? What do? Move the decimal point 3 to the right. That's $508. And then 90 times 7.024. You guys got the calculators.
632.
You're letting Steve have all the fun. I'm sorry. Sorry, go ahead. Who's going to say it?
632.16.
Whoops. Dyslexia. It's getting worse. I had a student say, oh, my dyslexia is bad. I got it too, don't worry. It's not the end of the world. Okay, so how much is this bond? How much should this bond be selling for? Give or take a few bucks. I'm sorry, $100,000. $40.16. Does that make sense? It's a 9% bond. Interest rates have gone down to 7%. It should be a premium bond, right? Interest rates have gone down. So what should the bond price do? So before you even do the calculation, you can sort of eyeball it. You can say, look, it's a 9% bond. Now interest rates are 7%. I should wind up with a premium bond. And if you don't get a premium bond, you did something wrong. Make sense? Okay. Now, the second one is a 5% bond. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you go back to a good trend of
which one? Okay, 90 times 7.024. Okay, what is $90 times 10 years, right? $90 a year is 10 years. How much is that? $900. But is it really worth $900 to us? No, because we ain't going to get it right today. We're going to get $90 a year for the next 10 years. So what we need, and this is the verb you will hear in the industry. This is the verb you should use. We need to discount that $900 back to the present. See, maybe the stuff in Chapter 6 is starting to figure. You did the calculations. You know how to do them. Piano made me do them a bunch of times, but I didn't really know what the hell I was doing. But now maybe it's starting to sink in, percolate. I'm taking that $900 and I'm going to get over the next 10 years and I'm bringing it back to what it's worth to me today. And at 7%, $900 over the next $90 a year times 10 years over the next 10 years is worth to me today $632.16. If my required rate of return were less, it would be worth more. If the required rate of return were greater, we wouldn't pay $632 for it. We'd want to have it discounted. See, that's, they use that term often, and you want to learn what that means, because if you're going to, when you get into the industry, they're going to use it all the time. Oh, that's already been discounted. Are you with me? You understand? Okay, good. And then the $1,000 we're going to get in 10 years is not worth $1,000 today. At 7%, it's only worth $508. Because think about the rule. If you know the rule is 72, right? At 7%, I don't know. Forget it. Erase. And if you know the rule 72, you know what I'm talking about. The rule 72 says you take the interest rate and you divide it into 72, and that's how long it'll take for your investment to double. So about 10 years. At 7%, we expect our close, you know, whatever it is, 10.0 something or other. It takes a little over 10 years for it to double. Make sense? If you don't worry about that. Okay. 5% bond, where are we? That's on the board. 5% bond, 20 years, price to yield 8%. So what has happened to interest rates? Interest rates have gone up. We should see a discount bond. Exactly. So present value of the interest income, how much interest income are we getting from a 5% bond? $50. 20 years at 8%. Which table do we use? Left-hand side. 9.818. And then what are we going to get in 20 years? $1,000. But is it worth $1,000 to us today? No. We've got to go across 8%, down 20 years on the table on the right, because it's a single payment of $1,000. We're not getting $1,000 a year for the next 20 years. And what is that? 0.215? Or $215? Okay. 50 times 9.818? 490.90, says Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Add the two together. 705.90. So we would have a discount bond selling for approximately, depending on the credit rating and the vagaries of the daily market, $705.90. Is this hard? The calculations are easier than the conceptual understanding. That's what I've found. People can do the calculations once they do them a few times, and then they don't really understand what they're doing, and then you do it enough times and you go, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, George. And then Dave Jacob. Oh, yeah, you can, for the exam, you can bring your formula sheet, bring your present value tables, or I'll have copies, I'll have extras, formula sheets for Chapter 6 and Chapter 10. Cool? Jacob. Interest rates go down, bond prices go up, interest rates go up, bond prices go down. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there always a dollar
in? Well, not really. Some bonds are priced at $5,000. Some bonds are priced at $10,000. But the vast majority of bonds are priced at $1,000. So we'll always use $1,000. Just know that we all a par value in this class will always be $1,000. I should have put that on there, shouldn't I? It should be on there. I apologize. For the following $1,000 denominated bonds. Okay, questions? All right, I did that a lot faster than I thought I was. So let's continue. And after class, I didn't think I was going to get through all of Chapter 10. I was going to let you do the rest on your own. But after class, we'll do worksheet number one if those of you want to stick around, or we'll, what you just tell me what you want to do, and we'll stick around and do them. Now, a few other odds and ends. Reinvestment risk. I've hammered this idea of interest rates going down, bond prices going up, and back and forth. And it makes you feel like, oh, you should never buy bonds when interest rates are going up. And that's not necessarily true. The reinvestment risk is the uncertainty about the future value of an investor's bond investments that result from the need to reinvest bond interest payments and redemptions at yields not known in advance. Huh? Well, you don't care about this if you're using your bonds to live off of. If you're using the bonds for income, then you don't care. But if you're trying to build wealth, if you're accumulating assets by using bonds, and you don't worry about this if you buy a bond mutual fund, the mutual fund managers have to worry about this. But think about it. As you're getting your interest payments and your principal repayments, you have to reinvest them into more bonds. This is assuming you're not using them for income. So changing interest rates don't only affect the price of your bond. They also affect your future income as you need to reinvest the future income, interest income, and bond repayments. If interest rates have fallen, great, your bond has gone up, right? But now your interest payments, your principal repayments, are being reinvested at a lower interest rate. And likewise, if interest rates have risen, sure, my bonds have gone down, but now my interest payments, my principal payments, are being reinvested at a higher rate. So if you're in the bond world to try to make capital gains, you're terrified by rising interest rates. But if you're in it for the long term, assuming you're in it for the long term, 5-10 years or so, great, interest rates are getting big higher. My money is being reinvested at a higher rate. Make sense? Yes, Chanel.
So how do you really use bonds as an income?
Oh, you just have the money put in your checking account. These days, it's going to be a little. You're right. It's not going to be a little. It's not going to be a lot. Unless you have a ton of money, and then congratulations. But you're absolutely right. I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't really tell you what to invest in. Have you noticed that? I try my best to stay away. I'll show you certain things, and I hope some of you go, oh, yeah, I like that, or oh, I like that, or I don't want to stay away from that. Because that's the way the world works. But personally, I stay away from bonds right now. I should be far more invested in bonds than I am, and I'm not. So maybe some people will think I'm foolish and the stock market is going to kick me in the gut again, but I know it's going to do that. I've come to enjoy it. Not really, no. But I just don't. I'm sorry? Yeah, well, some people are doing money market mutual funds, and what are they getting for their money? What? They're getting nothing. 0%. Some mutual funds will pay you 0.01%, or many will, but that's coming out of the mutual fund's pocket. They're not making that money. They're literally rebating to you. Others just say, look, you're getting zero, sucker. This is it. This is what we're getting. We're losing money on these. You're not making any money. Yes, David? Oh, basis points. Yes. You're getting a basis point. I don't like this name, but you got to learn. You don't have to learn. I'm not asking you. 0.01%. No. Yeah, 0.01%. So 100 basis points is 1%. 100 basis points.
But we don't have to know that, right?
No, you don't have to know that. You should. You really should. You're going to learn it if you're sticking around in the industry. Now, duration is the measure of a bond's price sensitivity to the changes in interest rates and bond yields. This captures both the price and the reinvestment risk that we saw in the previous slide. We're not going to learn how to do it, but suffice to know that the longer a bond's maturity, the longer its duration, and the higher a bond's nominal yield and yield to maturity, the shorter the duration. It's a fairly complex calculation, we're not going to do it. But as the bond approaches its maturity date, and interest rates change in the financial world, the duration changes. So those short, in general, the shorter the duration, the less potential price volatility, and vice versa. So investors who have a specified time horizon can use bond immunization, don't you just love it, immunization, to increase the probability of successfully achieving their desired goals. The idea is you keep the average duration of your bonds investments equal to your time horizon. You would thus be more protected against interest rate-induced price swings. If interest rates really jumped or really dropped on you. The problem with this is it requires constant rebalancing of your bond portfolio since durations of bonds change as the interest rate changes and the bonds get closer to maturity. So who do you think does this? Do you and me? Do you and I? Do you and I do this with our $20,000 of bonds or whatever? No. Pension fund managers, bond mutual fund managers, you buy an intermediate bond fund which has an average duration of 4 to 5 years, the bond mutual fund managers are the ones who are moving the millions of dollars or billions of dollars around to keep the duration around 5 years. Make sense? Do we have to worry about this? If you get a job on Wall Street managing millions of dollars of somebody's money, learn how to do it. Okay, there are three bond investment strategies, and we're basically recapping because I think you've figured this out by now. The first strategy is you buy the bond simply for the interest income. The second strategy is a capital gain strategy. You speculate that interest rates will fall, sell the bonds at a capital gain. And then what you will hear is a total return strategy. And you might have heard of the PIMCO Total Return Bond Fund. It's the world's largest bond fund. The guy who ran it, Bill Gross, just left PIMCO. It's been a bit of big brouhaha. But you buy bonds for both the income and for the capital gains. So the easiest to implement would obviously be, everyone should say income. The easiest to implement would be the hardest to implement, because you got to decide when interest rates are going to fall, and nobody can do that. And you might be one of the people who are paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly do it. And then total return is somewhere in between. Bond laddering, you might hear this, is a strategy of purchasing bonds with staggering maturities. You purchase some bonds with short-term securities maturities, some bonds with intermediate term, and some bonds with longer-term maturities. Again, this is a method of diversification. It was very popular with pension funds, insurance companies, bond mutual fund managers, since they have considerable sums of money. The advantage is you're more diversified. The disadvantage is you're not more diversified. You're not concentrated. So if you thought that interest rates were going to fall, you would go way out to the long term, and your capital gains would skyrocket. Unless interest rates rose, and then you would have a huge capital loss. So here's an example of laddering. You'd buy some treasuries paying nothing, treasury bills, and then going up to, whoopee, the 30-year treasury paying 2.54%. That's why I can't get excited about bonds. You look at the long-term, the long-term, folks, for decades, bonds returned about 5, 6, 7%. So do you want to buy something that's going to, over the long term, pay you 2.5? I don't. But that doesn't mean the stock market won't 450% tomorrow. And that is our discussion of bonds. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Did I go too fast? No. Okay. Now, what I'm going to hand out now are the handouts for, I'm getting old. What can I say? Here, I'll give them to you on Tuesday. But I forgot to cut them in half. Anybody got a pair of scissors? Anybody got a pair of scissors? I forgot to cut them in half. No? Okay, forget that. Here is the handout for Chapter 18. And I'm going to make Chapter 18 assignment optional. It is the easiest 5 points all semester long. So all you got to do is spend 10 minutes, if that. I'll go over I won't. Maybe I'll do it Tuesday because I forgot to cut them in half, the worksheets. But it is the easiest 5 points you will get all semester long. So I suggest that you spend a little bit of time and do it. And bonus, I'm not making it required for you. It's required for the online students. Don't tell them that, okay? Don't tell them I made a bonus for you guys. Okay, you pass this one too. Okay. So we have, yes, one more. Test this back, please. Okay, so very quick little discussion of chapter 18, and then we'll come back to the worksheets, and I'll go make some copies of the worksheets. How's that? And so we can, those of you who want to stick around, we'll do that. But very quickly, what are preferred stocks, convertible securities? Well, if you go back to chapter 1, we had a category called hybrid securities. These things are hybrids. Preferred stocks, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stocks are hybrids. The idea is you have one foot in each world. They give you some of the advantages of equities, stocks, and they give you some of the advantages of fixed income bonds. But they also give you some of the disadvantages, too. Nothing's perfect. So when I remember, I don't know if you remember, I wrote on your best of both worlds, worst of both worlds, I might have written on your exam. And preferred stocks are in between bonds and common stock. So the term is very unfortunate. Bondholders have first claim on the corporation's assets. Well, not really. The tax man comes first, and then employees come first, and then the tax man. But for investors, bonds have first claim. Common shareholders, common stocks, have the last claim, and preferred are in between. And that's why the term is preferred. It has nothing to do with, oh, yes, I prefer these, and common. I don't want common stocks. No, that's the term common came from the term they were shareholders in common. So preferred stock typically pay a fixed dividend. We saw the common stock dividends grow over time. Remember? Preferred normally don't do that. They normally pay a certain amount of dividends, and that is it. That is the dividend you get. Now, from time to time, they might raise it. They could stop at any time. But normally, that is what you get. And it turns out that preferred stock have an advantage for corporations. If a corporation owns preferred stock of another corporation, they are taxed at a better rate than individuals, individual taxpayers. So right off the bat, you're at a disadvantage. We individual retail investors are at a disadvantage. Who buys preferred stock? Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway. He buys preferred stock of another corporation because he knows he's going to get a rich dividend, and he's not going to have to pay that much taxes on it, where we're going to have to pay higher taxes on it. What are the advantages? Highly predictable income stream, excellent record of meeting dividend payments, and there's the one that kills it for the rest of us. Tax benefits of owned by another corporation. So right off the bat, they're willing to pay more for it than we are. The disadvantages is that they have some of the advantages of stocks and bonds, and of course they have some of the disadvantages. They are susceptible to inflation, much like bonds, but unlike bonds, dividends can be suspended or postponed. Right? Bonds have to pay their interest payments. But stocks and common stock and preferred stock are equities, even though some people will refer to them as bonds. They're not. They're part of the equity of a corporation. And normally, they lack the potential for substantial capital gains. Whereas common stock, if the company explodes, the preferred's going to, the common's going to do really well. So you see, they have the best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds, advantages and disadvantages. And then this shows the difference of bond yields and preferred yields. They typically pay less than bond yields. Another thing not to like. And we do, the dividend yield is basically the same as it was in Chapter 5, annual dividend divided by stock price. The prices fluctuate mostly inversely to interest rates, although there's a greater risk of non-payment of dividends. And unlike bonds, the bond issuer is in default if the interest is not paid. The corporation can stop paying the dividend. So let's see. The conversion feature, we'll just talk about conversion in a little bit. Senior preferred, prior preferred, that's even a little bit more, different classes of preferred. Cumulative versus non-cumulative. When you buy preferred stock, if you buy cumulative preferred, that means if they suspend the dividend for your preferred, which they can do, when they start paying dividends again, they've got to go back and pay the dividends that they suspended for you. So all the things being equal, we'd rather have cumulative preferred than non-cumulative preferred. Because if they suspend the dividend, which is their right, then those dividends become cumulative. They go into what are called in arrears, and when they start paying a dividend again, they've got to pay it back to you. Make sense? So you'd rather have cumulative than non-cumulative preferred. And so callable, same idea. They can call away the preferred stock if interest rates have fallen. What is the bottom line? Forget participating. They're very rare. Preferred stock is normally owned by corporations. Some individual investors may acquire a taste for them, but in my opinion, you are better off buying the common stock for growth and income, dividends, and bonds for income. You're going to get, I think, the best of both worlds by being in the best of both worlds. Would you want income? Go for bonds. You want growth and income? Go for stocks. Okay, convertible securities. How are we doing for time? Not bad! Really fast. Both bonds and preferred stock can be convertible. Now, doesn't convertible sound cool? Like a convertible car, the wind blowing through your hair. The idea is you have, they call it an equity kicker. You have the ability to participate in the explosive growth of the company that the common shareholders do because you can convert your bond or your preferred stock into common stock. Now, when you buy the preferred stock or the convertible bond, it is very unlikely it would make sense for you to convert it. It's usually priced way below what would make sense to convert it to. So you're going to have to wait and hope, and maybe you think, that the stock is going to do really well, the company's going to do really well, and the common stock is going to explode. But if you have a bond and it's convertible to 20 shares of common stock, you have the right to turn in that bond and say, give me 20 shares. You see? That would mean, if it's a $1,000 bond, the price had better be greater than $50. If the stock ever gets that high. Are you with me? If the stock ever gets that high, then it makes sense. There's a conversion period, ratio, conversion price. This is what the worksheet is that if we have time today or Tuesday, we'll see what you guys want to do after class. We will go through and we'll learn the conversion value, conversion premium, conversion equivalent. Notice that there's a little bit of a, if the stock value is worth more than the bond value, the price of the security, the convertible security will go high. But because it's paying income, there's a bit of a floor here, and then it goes back up again. And that's the bottom line. They allow you to partake in the potential capital appreciation of the common stock with less risk because you're paying income, but you pay for that. Again, in my personal opinion, I believe that most of us individual retail investors are best served by focusing our attention on common stocks for growth and income and dividend, bonds for income. But there are always exceptions. So that was the, 7-minute version of Chapter 18. We'll go over the, if you want to stick around, stick around. We'll go over Chapter 18 calculations. We'll go over Chapter 10 calculations. Or we'll go over Chapter 6 calculations. So who wants to stick around? Otherwise, get out of here and let me get my pen. Where's my pen? Okay, who snuck in late? George, Kenny, Lily. Lily here? No. Kyle, Christina, Marco, Jerry, Betsy, Joel. Joel, I think I got something for you. You still here? Oh, here you are. Okay. Kyle, still here? Okay. Joel. Oh, no, I don't have something here. Daniel, Victor, Munoz, still here. Here you go. Thank you. Kyle, still here?
I'm here.
Okay. Martinique, Isaiah Tapia, no. Adam, no. Daniel, no. Elizabeth, yes. Jacob, yes. Okay, there you go, Kyle.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so Jacob, what do you want to do?
I was going to ask you about the
kids' yeah. Oh, no, somebody took it on Tuesday. I should have asked. Somebody took the spreadsheet on Tuesday, the big jerks. No, I don't, but I do have... Did you get the valuation worksheet? Did you get this?
Somebody left their phone.
Oh, who left their phone? They'll be back. Okay. Did you get the... From Tuesday? From the test. No, no, no. No, I just graded it online. Did you take it online?
Yeah, no, not...
Okay, what did I do with that? Let me see if I... Ooh, very good question. Let me see. Uh-oh, we got problems. Where the hell is it? We got problems. Okay, I got to go look for it. Because it's not graded here. Yeah, tell me on Tuesday. Oh, I'm getting old. Okay, yes, question? Chapter 9. Who needed a chapter? Somebody else needed a chapter 9. Yes, I do. Where's chapter? Oh, here's chapter 9. Who needs chapter 9? The game been good to me. Okay, chapter 9? Chapter 9. Who else needed chapter 9? No, that was you. That was you, right, Elizabeth? You're the one who needed chapter 9. Poopy, how could I run out of... Nino siento bien. This isn't good. This is not good. Okay. All right, so, George, which one do you want to go over? Today's stuff?
Yeah, today I'm going to prepare up at least something from the other day.
Okay, and Ricardo?
Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, hooray! Woo! Yeah, that sucker.
I got
my
comic.
Shit. That's the Samsung.
Next Thursday. Next exam is next Thursday. Remember, always on the look. Always on the website, you will see when it says next exam. You see? Next exam, Thursday, April 30th. Okay? All right, so let's go to the worksheet. And so which one do you want to do, George?
The first one that you did...
Today?
Yeah, was it...
Number 3 is the first one we did today.
Yeah, number 3.
Okay, now... What I'm going to do is I'm going to go get a... I'm going to go make a copy. I'm going to... Because somebody's coming to my office at 11. So I'm going to put a little sign up saying I'm going to be here. And I'm also going to make a copy of the worksheet. Do you have a copy of the worksheet? I haven't turned it out. I haven't turned it out. I didn't give out the chapter 10 assignments. I'm chapter 9. Here are the chapter 10. I didn't give them out today. Oh, jeez. Here's the chapter 10 assignment. I'll give them out on Tuesday. That's okay. Chapter 9? That looks like chapter 10. That's the worksheet. That's the worksheet. Okay, I'm going to go get, I'm going to put a sign up, all right? because I got somebody coming at 11 o'clock, and he owes me money. Yes, Captain's going to be the same as the worksheet.